Hello, thank you. I'd like to call this meeting to order. It's January 3rd, 2017. Would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I'll take roll call now. Mr. Maury?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Oh, I don't have a language. Estoy aquí.
Mr. Dennis? Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be arriving later this evening. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
We have 13 members present. The first order of business this evening is the election of the temporary chair of the legislature, and I will now open the floor for nominations. Ms. Kellis?
Mr. Chair? I'd like to nominate Dan Klein.
No, I'm sorry. Temporary chair. I misspoke.
Oh, Martha Robertson, please.
Is there a second?
Perfect person.
Second.
Rich John. Thank you. Are there any other nominations? May I have a motion to close nominations? Mr. Burbank? Is there a second? Ms. Kiefer? All those in favor of closing nominations, signify with aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any opposed? Motion carried to close nominations. All those in favor of nominating Ms. Robertson as temporary chair, please signify with aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Vote is unanimous. Ms. Robertson?
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you, everybody. Mic's not working. Can you hear me? Is it on? It's okay. All right, so I have my temporary chairs report here. Welcome, everybody. Happy New Year. And I just want to first recognize Kathy Covert and Michelle Podroff and Katrina McCloy, who's left already, our staff for the legislature, who do a terrific job for us. And I just want to thank all of them for another year that's just gone by and everything they're going to do for us this coming year. Thank you so much. And following in Frank Proto's tradition, I think I'll prattle on about, maybe the housing summit or child care. Actually, there's a really important story on NPR this afternoon about child care, so go home and listen to it. Or maybe we should get rid of the Ethics Advisory Board following the lead of Congress today. But maybe we'll just take nominations for the floor for chair of the legislature for 2017. Are there any nominations? Julie Kiefer.
Thank you, Martha. I'm pleased, after much consideration, to nominate Mike Lane to yet another term as our chair. He has done an excellent job being the public face for our county. He speaks always thoughtfully and appropriately. He's very good with words. He's patient almost all the time. And it's particularly appropriate that he get to serve as chair this year in our bicentennial year. Mike is quite a history buff, and he has made certain that we're going to have the celebration that we deserve. So I hope, Mike, you're willing to accept this nomination.
Thank you, Dooley. Is there a second for Mike's nomination? Glenn.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Are there any other nominations for chair of the legislature? Jim Dennis.
I move the nominations be closed.
All right. Is there a second to that nomination? Rich John. All in favor of closing the nominations for chair of the legislature, please raise your hands. That's unanimous. I'll say any opposed. I didn't see any, but all right, that's unanimous. Then the nominations are closed. Mike Lane is our nominee for chair of the legislature. All in favor of supporting Mike Lane for chair for 2017, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Congratulations, Mike, and welcome.
Thank you, Martha.
Thank you, Martha. Martha Robertson had the chair of this legislature for 4 years preceding me and did a wonderful job, and we acknowledge that. And people who've been here a while can share their experiences and advice with all of us, and we appreciate that. I'd like to say thank you to all of you for asking me to do this again, for voting for me to do it again. It's humbling. We're all equals here. As chair, I am simply the first one who gets to talk, the first among equals. And we do a lot to try to hold our team together. I've been real pleased particularly the last 2 years, at the teamwork that all of you have shown. We have disagreements, and that is proper and as it should be. But we have never let those disagreements become personal. And we have, I think we have the best interest of all of our constituents at heart as we cast our votes, as we talk and debate, and as we try to move our county forward into these early years of the 21st century. I'll have more prepared remarks at our next meeting, including the appointments to our committees for 2017. But again, I just want to thank particularly Dooley Kiefer for the very kind words that she just spoke for me, and I'd like to thank Glenn Morey for seconding my nominations. Dooley and I have served. We came onto the legislature at the same time in the mid-1990s. She served one more term than I have because I was off for one term. But I have a lot of respect for Dooley. And Glenn, you're one of the newer members, but I've known you for a long time as supervisor before you were here in the town of Groton. And a lot of respect for the work you did over there as well. The first order of business that I need to conduct this at this point is the election of the vice chair. And so I'm going to open nominations for vice chair. And I'm going to recognize Anna Kellis.
I'd like to nominate Dan Klein.
Nomination for Dan Klein. Go ahead and speak, and then we'll ask for the second.
Well, I just want to acknowledge in my obvious enthusiasm to elect to nominate Dan for this position. I seem to jump steps, but I feel very strongly about this. I've known Dan for several years now, and last year was your first year. I was very impressed, very even keel, very level-headed, very thoughtful. I think that you held a strength in the legislature that sometimes we need, an anchor that we need, and I think it's the perfect position as the vice chair, and I feel very strongly about you taking this position, so hopefully you'll accept it, but I was honored to serve with you as our vice chair.
And is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Moore.
No second.
Are there any other nominations for vice chair? Go to Jim Dennis.
Mr. Chair, I would move the nominations for vice chair be closed.
We have a motion to close the nominations. Is there a second? Seconded by Martha. Ready to vote on closing the nominations? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That is unanimous. So we will proceed to vote on the nomination of Dan Klein as the vice chair for 2017. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Congratulations, Dan.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Dan, would you like to say anything?
Just I appreciate your support, and I hope I can live up to your expectations.
So do we. Dan's been great this year, and I've appreciated serving with him during 2016. Well, that's the organization part of our meeting. So now we're going to go into the regular things that we do. Before I do that, I'm going to remind everyone that if you have cell phones, please silence them or anything else that might go off. Also, if there should be an emergency like a fire, emergency exits are to my right in the back of the room and to my left in the front of the room. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. Let's go to presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I want to say we are going to hear from our poet laureate in a few minutes, but before that, we have a pretty important proclamation this year, starting the year, and very appropriate. This will be not only the Tompkins County's bicentennial year, but we're going to proclaim it the year of the woman in Tompkins County. And this is very special, and we have a wonderful audience out there that's come for, I know a lot of you have come for this. We want to thank certainly our county historian, Carol Kamen, and certainly our former legislator chair, Martha Robertson, for the work that they've done on this. Martha, I wondered if you might come up to the front and read the proclamation, and I want to ask, please, the other women legislators to come up with her, and all women who are employees of the county and our county historian to come up to the front with us. I would call everybody, all the women up, but there are kind of too many. But you're all to be part of this as well. Well, we don't usually do that, but I'll let you. Yes, you may.
Carol, please come up. Carol.
And Kathy Covert and Michelle would be, and Katrina would all be up, but they've got to take the minutes.
Nice.
So, Marcia, come on up. Paula.
I'm very excited.
Any of our department heads that are here, any of the other employees. We just want to make this a special time to think about the women in our community. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I want to thank, especially thank Carol. Carol, don't stand way back. Carol Kamen, our county historian, who tells the most wonderful stories and brings just the right pieces of information forward at just the right time. She brought this idea to me in November or December, and we worked together on the language. And Carol's going to say a few words in a minute. I'm going to do a little history, too, just a little bit. That this is, first of all, we're celebrating why now, why here. 2017 is the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote in New York State. And a lot of people think of 2020. Well, that's true. And people think of 1848 because of New York's role in the Seneca Falls Convention in 1848. Well, between 1848 and 1920, there was a lot of really, really hard work that got done, and women fought huge battles with many allies, male allies as well. But we know of Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, a couple of other folks we don't always think but were part of the movement, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, Carrie Chapman Catt, Mary Garrett Hay, Lucy Stone, many, many others. And it's important that we start to talk about these women and talk about and men and talk about what happened in New York State and how New York really was pivotal in women getting the right to vote across the country. I will point out that Native American women and men didn't get citizenship rights until 1924, and in many states still didn't have the right to vote until much later. In fact, it wasn't until the 60s, the 1965 Voting Rights Act, that all women and men, Native of any ethnic or political persuasion, had the right to vote. I will say we still don't have an equal opportunity to vote in this country, sadly, in many places. So it is something that we will fight for, I think, sadly, perhaps forever, that we need to make sure everyone actually has the opportunity to vote and have their vote counted. A brief story about what really put the vote over the top in New York State. New York State wasn't by far the first state to get to have women have suffrage, but it was the first eastern state and the first major state, and that really was pivotal in encouraging the Congress to actually pass suffrage. And to actually, you know, how many of you have signed online petitions in the last year? So, I mean, what they did was, I mean, they did all sorts of things over the decades, but the biggest final push for the movement was a petition that was carried person by person, door to door. I'm going to read from something by Robert Cooney from Winning the Vote, The Triumph of the American Woman Suffrage Movement. To answer charges by opponents that most women did not want to vote, suffragists spent more than a year going door to door in nearly every city and town in the state, collecting the signatures of over 1 million women who said that they wanted to vote. Organizers climbed thousands of tenement stairs, walked country lanes, and visited the homes of the rich and poor. The result was the largest individually signed petition ever assembled, eventually totaling 1,030,000 names, a majority of the women in the state. In 1915, the effort had lost in New York State by more than 80,000 votes. So they combined this petition signing with an aggressive advertising campaign, but literally block by block organizing. In the end, suffrage won in every borough of New York City, and the large majority in the city overcame a slight loss upstate, so that the measure carried by more than 100,000 votes statewide. Suffrage won in Auburn, Binghamton, Buffalo, Newburgh, Austin, Oswego, Schenectady, Syracuse, and Westchester, but lost in Albany, Kingston, and Rochester. And maybe you know, Carol, did it pass in Tompkins County? Okay. All right. So I wasn't able to find that piece of information. So I'm going to take a moment and read the proclamation, and then I want to hand this and the microphone to Carol with my great thanks. Whereas 2017 is the 100th anniversary of the passage in New York State of the Suffrage Act, granting women in New York the right to vote in local and state elections, and whereas New York was the first eastern state to pass women's suffrage, an act that led to the passage of the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution, recognizing the right for women to vote across the nation, and whereas true and full citizenship for women was not accomplished merely by achieving suffrage, for example, women were not permitted to serve on juries in New York State until legislation passed in 1937, and whereas not until federal civil rights legislation was passed in the 1960s was the full range of citizenship rights legally mandated to include women and people of every race, and of any political suasion as a right of that citizenship. And whereas even today, women still must struggle for full and equal participation in the labor force and in political and economic life. And whereas women have the right to make decisions about their lives to determine their physical and psychological well-being, yet they often suffer in a climate of sexual innuendo and or physical harm. And whereas the contributions of women to the progress of our nation often go unacknowledged. And whereas if we wish to protect the rights of women in our democratic society, it is important to recognize, declare, and uphold those rights. And whereas, as the dignity of all persons must be protected, women have the right to live without fear for their physical or emotional safety and the right to pursue their own dreams in a society that recognizes their value. Now, therefore, the Tompkins County Legislature does hereby proclaim 2017 as the Year of the Woman in Tompkins County and urges our residents to recognize and celebrate the crucial role that women of all races and ethnic and political backgrounds have played in our county's history, as well as their important place throughout our county today.
Women in Tompkins County worked very hard for the vote. When the vote failed for suffrage in 1915, the women in New York said, "We will fall forward." And they did. They took the whole issue of suffrage forward. I'd like to thank the legislature on the behalf of women of the past, who are mostly unsung, and women of today striving to care for those they love and making this a more harmonious world. And for all those girls nurtured by fathers and mothers and teachers in our care for such a short time, to whom we send out strong and healthy into a world now made a bit more insecure. I'd like to thank the legislature for this proclamation, for making a bold statement of respect and appreciation for its female citizens, and commemorating the centennial of women's suffrage in the state, and marking Tompkins County as a place of greater safety in an uncertain world. Thank you.
Thank you all. I just had a request from a legislator to allow some of the other women legislators to make comments if they wished, and I think that would be a nice thing. Carol?
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Carol Kamen, for keeping us so aware of our history. You enrich our lives, and thanks to Martha for working and bringing this to us. And thanks to, I can't believe how many people have come out to actually be here in person as we do this. And it's very impressive. It's obviously an issue this people care deeply about, and I hope that we continue through in the entire year to act in ways that bring to bear some of the aims of having this be the year of the woman. And I just want to mention, too, I would really like to see us figure out a way to engage in activities throughout the year. Maybe the first thing our chair can take on, because it's not just the women who've come out, it's the Friends of Women, to think about how, and help the legislature think about how we might put some more teeth behind making this the year of the woman here. And two areas that I would want to think more about, one would be equity, because I think that equity issues are women's issues, and women's issues are equity issues. The year of the woman here in Tompkins County should be about, yes, women need to be all registered to vote, and we should make sure that happens. But we, unless we can get more than the top level up past that glass ceiling, we haven't enriched, 80% of women unless we deal with equity issues. So maybe this is the year we can think about how to make sure we get our human and social services up to a higher level as we have with our physical services here. And then the other would be, there's always more that we could do in terms of figuring out how to make sure that all, certainly we have the power to make sure all county employees are thoroughly trained, including us on the legislature, about how to make sure that we're doing what it says in that proclamation and learning ever new ways to treat each other with respect and treating each other's ideas equally regardless and pace of talking, whatever, equally regardless of whether you're male or female or transgender. So I hope that we'll do at least those two things, and maybe, I'm sure there's more we could think about. So thank you to everybody again.
I wanted to just thank every woman here for inspiring me by coming today and by being so profoundly beautiful vision for me, and very appreciative. And for every woman who could not be here tonight, my heart is going out to you as well, because this last year for me has been a very powerful experience of coming into my own as a woman, as someone who's taking a position of leadership and owning it with pride in a way that I realized I needed to do in a way that healed something in me. So I want to share that with you in my own vulnerability, and acknowledge that there is a rhetoric that has come out in the last couple months that I have found one, scary, and two, acknowledge that it has been there. It may have been a bit in the closet for the last couple decades. So what it shows me is, the silver lining of it is that it's no longer in the shadows. And it shows me that we have work to do. And I am seeing that a lot of the youth females are not here right now. And I would love to encourage every single one of us that's here that feels the call to continue to fight for equality for women, that each one of us takes a young woman under our wing and encourages them and fosters strength and inspires them. So I'm just asking all of us in this next year to hold that in our minds, to continue to push for the equity, which we need, men and women, I think, really need to experience that to create that equity. So thank you.
Dooley, did you want to speak?
Not necessarily, but I feel I must, so I will tell you. I will tell you one anecdote. I began my elective public service running for the Cayuga Heights Village Board when I was a very young mother, and I got elected, which was a nice surprise, and learned that every year one of the older male members of that board was given a leave of absence so he could spend the winter months in Florida, and he would come back and rejoin the board after the winter had passed. So the next year, my husband had a sabbatical, and we wanted to go to California together, and I asked for a leave of absence and was told absolutely not. Women were treated differently then, and that was a hard lesson to learn. It wasn't news to me, but I hadn't experienced it quite so boldly before. And it just motivated me to keep going.
Leslyn, we had to turn to the women on the legislature after the proclamation. Wondered if you have something to say.
I most certainly do. And I was standing with you all in spirit, my women colleagues in the legislature. I apologize that I could not be here. I was running, you all, trying to get here. And then a lovely lady downstairs said, lovely proclamation. And, you know, tears were welling up because I wanted to stand here. Martha, I do want to thank you, and to Carol and others for just the idea behind it and for bringing it forward. Certainly meant a lot to me. Believe it or not, I walk in as you're talking, Anna, about mentoring young ladies, which is partly what I was involved in, some of the young ladies who were having some crises at this moment, unexpected, that I had to deal with. We have, and I want to talk about a program that we have at GIAC called, we started calling it the Girls Empowerment Group, and they changed the name to Motivated Sisters of Strength after a year or two of being together. And it is an awesome opportunity for young ladies who have found themselves, some a little lost, some just struggling with issues of understanding that they are proud women. And so for us, it was an opportunity to step in and bring them together, not only to support each other, but to meet
other wonderful women in the community that they can connect with and build mentoring and social relationships with that can help them to sort of recapture the pride and the strength in being a woman. So it is a fabulous opportunity if any one of you want to have a chance to meet with these young ladies. Imagine what it was like. We couldn't vote, but imagine what it was like for, or what it's like now for young women who doesn't even understand what it means to put on some nice clothes and go out to a fancy restaurant. Some of us take that for granted. For a lot of these women, that's not anything they know. And to be able to do something as simple to many of us as that puts their self-esteem at so many notches higher to understand what it takes to do something as simple as that or to even connect with each other, something they were afraid to do because of trust issues. As a woman, I'm happy to serve on this body and I'm happy to have a loud voice for issues that matter to me. For years, I sat on this body and was quiet about some things that, you know, you ought to be quiet about, or you were taught that you're supposed to be quiet about. But more recently, I've gotten a little boisterous. I don't know what's going on, but I'm liking it. And you put up with a lot. You put up with a lot when you are a woman in service and in positions like these. I remember when I first started, I'm not going to take too much time, Mike, but I wasn't here to stand with it, so bear with me. And people in the streets would essentially let me know that my time is theirs wherever I was. I couldn't go out to dinner without people saying, I don't mean to disturb you. Yes, you do, because you're sitting at my table. But you needed to, and you needed to, and so on. Or just to be in a leadership position and people not take you seriously because you are not male, one. Two, you're not white male. As a black woman, I do feel that in a huge way. And so I'm extremely thankful for this proclamation to support and recognize us. So thanks again, Martha, for that. And thank you for whatever it is you said before the proclamation, because you and I had that conversation. I wasn't here for it. And thanks to all of you for continuing to support us as women. One, and as us as women in leadership positions. We've got a long road ahead of us, but we are going to break that ceiling. Yeah. Someday, my daughter believes she will, but one of us will break that ceiling.
Thank you, and thanks for everyone who joined us tonight. You're welcome to stay for our whole meeting. We'd like to have you here. But you've made this particular part of our meeting and this particular event special by your presence here. Thank you. Yes, Martha.
And since public privilege of the floor is next, anybody's...
We're going to the poet laureate next. Go ahead.
Poet laureate. Well, I invite anybody to stay for the public privilege when you get to add your perspectives as well in 3-minute blocks. Thanks. Cal knows how to bring a crowd in.
Anybody keep count? We must have well over 100. Over the past 2 years, Tompkins County has been very fortunate to have a person who's continued in the role as our poet laureate and who's done a wonderful job for us. Tompkins County is one of the few counties that has a position of poet laureate. I know it's not too well paid, but it is important to us to know that the culture in Tompkins County means something and to designate someone. Jack Hopper, John Hopper, has been our poet laureate. He's done a great job, outstanding, going out to the community, coming here to visit at our legislature meetings, and reading to us and helping us to understand the power of words. And I'd like to ask Jack Hopper if he would come up.
Thank you, Mike.
Welcome.
Good to be here. Thank you all. Just like to say a few words before I read one poem. This is it's a hard act to follow, what we just had, but it is, as Mike said, an important role. And it's been a privilege to serve for 2 years. I'm relieved in a way that it's over, because it opens up some time for me that I wasn't able to devote to things that are also poetic, private and public too, besides being laureate. But mainly it's the joy of being able to serve, to take poetry out, not to the streets exactly, though we actually did that, but to work with older people, to encourage people with their own poetry, and even to initiate some writers who had not really written before and said, hey, I just wrote a poem. And sometimes it worked. So that's probably the greatest joy, is just have one person say, hey, thank you so much. I would like to thank you for endorsing me in these 2 years, and to John Spence at CAP, who is now considering my successor at some point, and Kathy Covert also, for all you've done. It seems right that I should read a poem called Solstice. I grieve with you, tree, dark and leafless against the sunless sky, content in spite of winter, when no warm wind draws breath and snow chokes earth. Imagine a celestial screech, wheels grinding to a halt, cogs lock after this heavenly sneeze, freezes silence, skips a beat, and everything reverses, and everything begins again. Last of tree's foliage clings to a distant bough. I squint and marvel that it still has color. Then look closer. It's a cardinal. As leaf sharing space, as leaving for a warmer time, I hear no rising diapason, only see him where he rules, defiantly above the cold, dispensing hope. Thank you.
Great poem. I'm glad we're back on the head to the longer days now. Jack, we'd like to say thank you again and give you a certificate of appreciation from our county legislature to you for the valuable contributions that you have made to us and the people of Tompkins County as our county poet laureate for the last 2 years. Come back and see us often. You can always come read to us.
Okay, thanks.
Our treat.
I'm not aware that we're going to have an executive session tonight. Is that right, John and Joe? We'll move next to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that the public has to speak to us for up to 3 minutes on any topic If you'd like to speak, we'd like you to sign one of the blue cards in the back of the room that are here. We have one for each of you who wants to speak, obviously, and just sign it and send it up. When you sign the blue card, you are agreeing to our rules. You're agreeing to the three-minute time limit that we have. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agreed to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. And you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. There is a screen to my left on the wall, and it'll count down the 3 minutes, at the end of which there will be an audible sound. If you're still speaking at that time, we would ask that you please conclude. I have two blue cards. If there are any more, please hand them up. The first one is Alicia Kennelly. Would you please come to the microphone and tell us your municipality, and please speak to us.
Yes, hi. I'm an Ithaca resident. I also serve on the leadership team of Planned Parenthood of the Southern Finger Lakes, so I wanted to express my gratitude for all the work that was done in support of the proclamation discussed earlier. Planned Parenthood is celebrating its 100th year as well, and it's remarkable to me that 100 years later, women still struggle to receive recognition of and access to our rights. At Planned Parenthood, we are acutely aware that members of the incoming administration want to defund us, which would, if they are successful, cause a national health disaster. Millions of women, nearly half of whom are people of color, and many women who live in rural areas, would lose the care they rely on each year. More than half of Planned Parenthood's health centers are in rural or medically underserved areas. And without Planned Parenthood, many of these patients would have nowhere else to go for care. So thank you to all those involved with the proclamation and for keeping women front and center. It's needed now more than ever. Thanks.
Thank you. Deborah Dawson. This is the last card, unless there's others that could hand it up.
Well, Happy New Year, everyone. I realized it's been about a year since I started attending your meetings, so last month I actually sat down and read your charter, our charter, which is long and detailed, and I had two takeaways that I wanted to share with y'all. First of all, I think we owe the members of the Charter Review Committee a debt of gratitude and respect for taking the time and attention that was necessary to determine what changes needed to be made to that very long and involved charter. So thank you, Dooley, thank you, Mike, and thank you everyone else who worked on that. My second takeaway was that it suddenly became clear to me, it takes me a while, that the main thing that this legislature does is safeguard the budget of our county. And that really is so significant to me, because I believe that a budget is a moral document. So when we make choices about how we're going to spend our resources, we're really making choices about which of our social and moral values we're going to be able to support. We're heading into a time period now where the state's tendency to push costs down to us is going to be exacerbated by an administration that I have no doubt will not be generous when it comes to social needs. So I hope that you will all hang tough, because I think the moral decisions that you're going to have to make are going to be a lot harder. While I appreciate and applaud the proclamation that you announced tonight and the support for women, I think it's more important that as you go on making your decisions, you make those decisions in ways that support and protect the people who are least able to fend for themselves in our community, and there are a lot of them. I guess I'm just being a nudge, but I hope that you'll remember that, and I appreciate all that you do in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's proceed to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I see George McGonigal, from our city council person from the city of Ithaca.
Good evening and Happy New Year. I don't have anything really to talk about tonight other than to mention that the pilot program with INHS that I spoke about last time is going to come to a vote tomorrow night. So the main reason I came here this evening is to listen to you if you have thoughts about that or anything else.
Okay. Does anyone want to comment on that for George? Dan?
Yeah, just to mention that tomorrow at the Government Operations Committee, Jay Franklin, our county assessor, will be there to answer our questions as well, to give us a little more information. So it's not tonight's not the last chance to comment. It's 3:30 tomorrow.
Jim Dennis?
George, as this came up a few weeks ago, many of us began to search out information about it and better understand what the city is trying to do with this particular thing. And a concern I had was whether it was an IDA kind of a project or not. Would we be involved in that? And no, we are not. And no IDA would be. You have the right to do what you do because of the fact you're a city. And Jay has done a great job explaining the situation to us, I think. So,
Carol?
Yeah, I just want to pass along information I learned actually looking through the documents that were available. I learned that this amount that the public is basically being asked to forego is going to stimulate $19 million worth of investment in our downtown housing stock. So I do believe that this is a wise investment to be making, and I hope I would urge you, George, to vote for it.
I'm actually going to recuse myself because I do quite a bit of business with INHS, so I'm not going to vote either way.
Martha Robertson.
Just a quick question. Is there the agreement will be a payment in lieu of taxes, so taxes will be paid, right? There's an agreement that would be, and maybe this is a Joe question or George, so just so the public knows what we're talking about, it's not that INHS properties would not be paying any property taxes, correct?
Absolutely correct, yes. And the amount is based on the amount of rent, as I understand it, that's generated by those parcels.
So that is, I mean, that's consistent with, in fact, proprietary landlords also pay an assessment based on the income that they generate from their properties. So it's, as I understand it, so it's not that unusual. Okay.
Less than being clear.
So Martha asked part of my question, but for the public's sake, because I got a lot of questions as well, could we just get the Cliff Notes version of what this is and what it will be doing for public's sake?
Yeah, I'll do my best, and George can help, and Jay will be here tomorrow. So well, that'll be our troika. This pilot is legally available to the city. It will apply to residential properties that are being renovated by INHS. I believe that are they currently owned? Are they already owned by INHS? And this is simply to leverage, as I understand it, renovation dollars to improve those properties. It is, as Martha said, it's a payment in lieu of tax, so the emphasis is on payment. So there are dollars that are generated by these properties. And, again, I go way back on something called shelter rent. This is kind of a successor of shelter rent, where the amount of the pilot is based on the amount of rent, net rent from those properties. And because net rent is relatively low in these properties, that means that the pilot is constrained, as is the rent. So this is one way of, much like the legislation that you approved not long ago, is a way to help keep these properties affordable in the long term through the way we tax them, or the way they're taxed.
Thank you.
Yes, Karen.
I think it's great that they're going to, somebody from INHS, is it Scott or Joe Bowes, will come to government operations tomorrow. But I think there's been enough discussion here that maybe it would be worth at some point in the upcoming months asking one of them to come here and do, you know, the presentation at the beginning of the legislature and just get an update about what are the kinds of things they're doing these days and, you know, where do they see it going, whatever, you know, would be useful, this among them. But I think it's one of many activities that would be good for us as we support affordable housing, since they're one of the big players, to know about firsthand.
Just want to mention this is George's time, but go ahead, Martha.
Yeah, just Carol, you know somebody we can ask?
No, well, I don't
That'd
think
be great.
I don't think it should be. I try to keep home and business separate, so
Mr. Chair,
I think it should be a more official request.
Mr. Chair, I just want to repeat and make sure that those who are watching or who have been asking lots of questions, tomorrow night, City Council, the vote will be happening on this. Right, George?
Correct.
And City Council meeting begins at?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. So if people want to speak to it, they come at that time. If they want to speak to in public speak at 6 o'clock. All right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Julie Kiefer.
A different question, George. Has Common Council set their meeting dates for 2017 yet?
As far as I know, they haven't changed, and they're always the first Wednesday of the month at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Thank you.
Will?
And George, I just want to thank you for bringing this to our attention, and thank you and Duck for consistently coming and making us aware of city issues. I know it's another meeting, and it's been very, very helpful. So thanks.
Thank you. I actually enjoy it. So,
Peter?
I wish I understood exactly what this thing was. I'm not familiar with it. And in things like this, it seems there's always a nice, simple way of looking at it, which says if there's some kind of transfer of money, there are people who win and people who lose, or parties that win and parties that lose. And I just wonder if someone who understands it could say, give me a quick answer to that question, is what's going on here in the transfer of money?
Can I try that?
Sure. Absolutely.
Make an attempt? This goes back to the financial crisis, the Great Recession of 2007, 2008, and some of the big banks in New York City did things they weren't supposed to do, and they were fined by the state several million dollars. And so the state has all this money from that, and the state wants to give $4 million of it to INHS to improve their rental properties, many of which are in really bad shape. I know this for a fact. And a number of people who live in those long-term, small rental houses that INHS has throughout the city are saying, well, gee, you're building all this new stuff. It's really beautiful and nice, and we have to live in this substandard housing. So their goal is to improve all this old rental housing quickly. And that's why they're trying to get this money and make the improvements to not just one or two at a time, but 44 places in the next couple of years. And in order to do that, and in order to get this money that they've been offered by the state, they have to act quickly. And according to INHS, they need these tax breaks. So this will cost the city taxpayer, the county taxpayer, and taxpayers in the school district. For the next 30 years, it will cost all three of those parties not a huge amount, but a significant amount, I would say, in order to make this housing affordable for guaranteed the next 50 years and hopefully pass that.
So if I could just follow up on that.
Please use the microphone, Peter.
Hello. So what you're telling me is first that there's a transfer of money from the state to INHS to make those properties good, okay? And then what's the other part? The other part is that taxpayers will pay money that ends up with who?
The county, the city, and the school district will get less tax money than they would if these properties were being taxed at their full value.
Okay, thank you very much.
Martha?
Yeah, let me just say, these 44 properties are now paying property tax.
Yes, they are.
Okay. As I said at the last meeting, the Community Housing Development Fund saw this as a package that requested and received a grant from the Housing Fund to support these renovations, these upgrades. And my understanding is that, I mean, one of the problems is when you fix up a house or an apartment, suddenly the sort of value in the market goes up, and the nervousness is that the price of these apartments would go up now that, you know, once they're renovated, made more attractive, et cetera, which certainly defeats the whole mission of INHS and the mission of the Housing Development Fund, which is meant to keep units affordable. So the issue is not that taxpayers are giving any money to INHS. It's not that the properties aren't going to pay taxes. It's not that the tenants aren't going to pay taxes through their rent. It's that the increment won't be exorbitant just because the units got improved. Does that explain that, Peter?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, the winner is the person that's living there where they're paying less for the amount than they would have if it were on the private market. I gather that's what you're saying.
Kind of, yeah. Okay.
Remember, this is George's time. We're trying to respond to him.
Yeah. George, who owns the property
Jim
now?
Jim Dennis.
The 44 property.
INHS owns the properties.
I think they're not a great understanding that they own all the properties. And these were properties that began in the 70s to get rehabbed, and now it's 30, 40 years later, and they have to get rehabbed again.
Well, they've been owned by INHS for different amounts of time.
Okay.
Carol?
Yeah, I want to address Peter's question a little bit, and I wanted to do it in front of George before he leaves, because for his benefit as well. I'm a planner, and the question you asked, that's the question we are trained to ask all the time about every single thing that we approach. Who benefits and who pays? And in particular, for public investments, or when you forego investment dollars, you know, what's the value and what's the cost? Well, I mean, we can list the cost, and then you can list the value as either the value to those individual 98 families, or maybe a different one each year over the next 50 years, and you can add that up. You can take the $19 million figure that I cited, or you can look at it like we do, I think, all of our decisions. For the dollars we're spending, what's the value to the community? you know, it's of what's the value to the community of you know, keeping 98 families who these days otherwise probably can't afford to continue to live in the city of Ithaca. What's the value to the community of having mixed incomes continue to happen here? What's the value to the community of having 44 property fronts, 98 units, renovated and fixed up? The outside, I assume, as well as the inside. So, you know, what does that mean when you drive by? What does it mean to the people in the properties nearby? And what does it mean to the rest of the community? So it's, you know, I don't think there's a simple answer to that question, because it depends which things you're putting on your balance sheet. So I just, again, I keep that in mind, because the things that we spend money on here, we're just one set of dollars in, or the dollars that we can have available at our disposal, whether we're charging the taxpayers or forgoing it from businesses, we make that value decision. Which ones do we want to address?
Mike?
I just wanted to point out, the way that everybody's been talking is kind of like these are like really rundown properties, and I don't want any of us to be like painted as like a slumlord, if that's not the case. So, I mean, these are legal apartments, obviously. They're in, you know, they need some rehab, basically, right, George?
Well, I shovel snow at several of them, and some of them are in really bad shape.
Okay.
Yeah.
I stand corrected.
So,
try, Mike.
George, thank you so much for coming out tonight. We appreciate it when you come.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, George.
Likewise.
All right, we'll go to a privilege of the floor for legislators. In the last two or three meetings, we've been kicking around the idea of 3 minutes per legislator. We don't have a rule like that in place, but something nice to think about as I call on you. Jim Dennis.
Somebody start the clock. I was especially impressed by the comment that was made about the incoming administration, and I'm not here to talk about what I think Donald Trump is going to do or the Republican Congress, but I do have a sense that as they want to obliterate Obamacare and the way it is presently put up, it works very well for New York State Obamacare. It has helped our Medicaid costs over the years that Obama has been the president, and that thing has been in place. So my fear is for county legislators and legislatures all over New York State that as the costs are shifted to the state for those people who are now in Medicare, it will only drive up the cost that we have to spend here on the local level. So when I hear someone talk about what they think we should do, and I've been here 10 years, and I've chaired this budget committee for 5 years, that's pretty much all I think about. What in terms of how can we provide services, keep the services as good as they are, and offer the things that needed to be done for all the people in the county. And that's my worry about what I'm hearing on January 3rd. Maybe 6 months from now, I won't be quite so worried, but that's the feeling I have now. And I think we have to be, all of us, Democrats and Republicans, have to be alert to that because of the cost shift that could come to every county in New York State.
Martha Robertson.
Thank you, Jim.
Sure.
Thank you, Jim. Piggybacking on the phrase cost shift, I think that's going to be the phrase of 2017. And we don't have to look all the way to D.C. We can look at Albany and just really disappointed in the governor's veto of the bill to support indigent defense costs. He wants to come back with his own proposal. What a shock. You know, he not willing to accept something that was passed with very large margins in both houses of the legislature. He's got to do his own thing. Well, and his message that made it sound as if state taxpayers aren't already paying for indigent defense, and this was going to require them. Who does he think pays state taxes? It's the same people who pay county taxes. The trouble is, as Joe pointed out in a message to all of us, that When something is on the county property tax, it's very regressive and very and a big burden compared to when something's in the state budget and the income tax and sales tax are better able to support those expenditures. So the fact that we now have a very, very fragmented and unequal way of treating indigent defense around the state is really, really a problem. And I hope the legislature and the governor can come up with something together very quickly. I did a little look at this last night. Something like 29 states, the state pays the entire cost of indigent defense. There's something like 12 where it's a shared expense. Pennsylvanians are lucky. Counties pay the entire expense for indigent legal support, but we're not that bad. But we're definitely in the minority of states where localities are expected to pay, and it's a constant. Sixth Amendment to the Constitution was that everyone should have adequate legal defense, and it's about time that we have a statewide law. I'm going to let people know that Congressman Tom Reed's district office phone number is 607-654-7617. Maybe next time I'll remember to bring the governor's number, but 654-7617. People should just, like, put those numbers on speed dial. Thanks.
Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to dovetail off of something that Jim said, and that's my main concern was that under the ACA, it's my understanding that Medicaid, that expense that is being subsidized by the federal government is going to sunset eventually. And that may not be the case anymore, but that was always my understanding. So my concern was always that as we expanded in New York State, eventually that bill will come due. So I think regardless of who the president is, that expense is going to go up in Medicaid. And if the state doesn't take over that expense for us, I just never see that problem getting better. And I'm glad that's something we all agree on in the room, is that that's the one. Man, if we can get the state to take over that would be everything right there. I mean, that would make such a difference in our county. So, and just from even a just now knowing what's going to happen standpoint. So, thanks.
Leslie McBain-Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Martha, for talking about indigent representation and the governor's really foul move. I tell you in my mouth, there's something wrong here. Thank you all for allowing me to ramble on earlier. I'm sorry I could not be here to stand with you again. This is the month that we celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I want to share with my colleagues that on Wednesday, the 11th, January 11th, and for everybody who's watching us, it's the lifelong Northside Southside Senior Program annual Martin Luther King Jr. luncheon, which is held at the Southside Community Center. From 11:30, I think it's $15 or so for the luncheon. So please, you're all invited. Wednesday, the 11th of January, a lifelong Northside Southside Senior Program luncheon. That is followed on Saturday by the GX annual Martin Luther King Community Breakfast, which begins at 9 o'clock at the Beverly J. Martin Elementary School gym. Our guest speaker this year is Dr. Sean Eversley Bradwell, and our theme for this year, if you are so moved by it, is darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And so we are welcoming all of you to please join us for the breakfast on Saturday morning.
That's it. Thanks. Carol Chalk.
Leslie, do you need people to sign up to help?
Always.
Okay. So people can do that too. And
so
you
call
know where
GX,
to go.
Sign up to help.
Yes. I just quickly pulled up the number Martha didn't have time to pull up for Andrew Cuomo. It's 518-474-8390. And I will add to that if you keep pressing the numbers to get to a person and you tell them you are an elected official, they actually transfer you to somebody who talks to you as opposed to just leaving the message. And if enough of us do that, not just from here, but elsewhere, they, you know, maybe it'll make a difference.
What is the number again?
518-474-8390.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, everyone. I mentioned a little earlier that this is the Tompkins County bicentennial year, and we've already established a bicentennial commission that's been hard at work for the past year, working on different kinds of commemoration activities that we'll be having, thanks to this group and many groups throughout the county. There's already, I know, a bicentennial art show that's going to be going on. It's been put together by, among other people, former chair of this board of, the Board of Representatives at that time, Barbara Mink. And we're already hard at work on some other projects. I think each of you found a lapel pin on your desk. I want to thank particularly Marsha Lynch, who did, had a lot to do with bringing that together, or the logo was, of course, picked by the Bicentennial Commission. I think it's a nice logo. It was designed by a TC3 graphic arts student. And we're allow that logo to be used on various activities if they request, if people and community groups ask the Bicentennial Commission for its use. I thought we ought to have a little bit about the history of the county at our first meeting. And so I opened up the 1866 atlas that was done of Tompkins County. And in the beginning of that, there is a historical sketch. And I'm just going to read the beginning paragraphs of that to can see how we came together. This land that had been used and occupied by Native Americans. Before that, prehistoric times that had been traversed by woolly mammoths and mastodons and saber-toothed tigers and things like that. When the American Revolution happened and soldiers came into this area, it became the West for those living in places like Boston and even Albany. And so it opened up after the Revolution as the military tract for those who had served in the Revolution as payment. The various divisions were basically on a map. Most of the people who had to had anything to do with the ownership were in Albany or in New York City. Many of the soldiers who received a script for the lands up here sold them, never came out here. Some did. But this historical sketch tells how the various units came together in a few brief words, and I thought it was kind of interesting. It does say that we were formed April 17th. Carol Kamen tells me she believes it's April 7th. But this says, the County of Tompkins was formed April 17th, 1817, by taking from the County of Seneca the towns of Hector, Ulysses, and Covert, and from the County of Cayuga the town of Dryden, and parts of the towns of Locke and Milton. That part of Locke set off to Tompkins was named Division, and the part taken from Milton was called Lansing. The county, as first organized, consisted of six towns: Hector, Ulysses, Dryden, Division, Lansing, and Covert. Subsequently, the name of the town of Division was changed to Groton. And April 13th, 1819, the town of Covert was taken from Tompkins County and reannexed to Seneca County. March 16th, 1821, the towns of Ithaca and Enfield were formed by dividing the town of Ulysses. And March 22, 1822, the towns of Caroline, Danby, and Cayuta were taken from the county of Tioga and annexed to the county of Tompkins. And the name of the town of Cayuta was afterwards changed to Newfield. June 4, 1853, a narrow strip was taken from the west side of Newfield and annexed to the town of Catharine in Chemung County. And April 17, 1854, the county of Schuyler was erected and the town of Hector taken from Tompkins and annexed to Schuyler. So we are what is left after all of those actions taken forward. Anybody who's ever studied what it takes to annex anything in this day and age, nothing less than an act of a legislature, often has to be amazed by what they used to do when they transfer properties back and forth. Why was it important to form Tompkins County in 1817? Because the population was growing, and people needed to have courts locally that they could get to. They needed to have notary publics, which were rare back then, that could notarize things like deed transfers. They needed to have a county clerk's office to record their documents in. They needed a sheriff to enforce money judgments and to arrest people from time to time when necessary, keep some order. So a county was important. Transportation was simply terrible back then. Think about when we need to take a trip to Albany. It troubles us, but it means that, you know, driving out 3 or 4 hours to get there and come back after that. Think what it would have taken to get to Albany or even to Syracuse when we were in Onondaga County or even to Auburn before trains, before roads of any significance, and before any public conveyance other than horses was there at all. There wasn't even stagecoaches at the beginning of the 19th century. So that's the need for Tompkins County. We built a courthouse here, and we got the state legislation that let us have the county of Tompkins. We got named for Daniel Tompkins, who was a very well-thought-of governor of New York State, had been basically a political hero of the War of 1812, and who came this close to becoming president. Seems like that happens with New Yorkers all the time. But he became vice president, and we remember him in particular, just as he was leaving office, for his efforts to end slavery in the state of New York. Because early on, there were slaves in Tompkins County. Not a lot, but they were here. And by the legislation that was adopted in 1817, that went away. It took a long time. It took another 10 years to 1827. But Daniel Tompkins started the effort that eventually ended for that awful institution going away well before the Civil War. So thanks for letting me take a couple of minutes to talk about our history. We'll be hearing a lot more about our history as we go through our bicentennial year. Yes, Peter.
I have a quick question. I've heard that story like that. I mean, I can't remember all the names and all the transfers. But periodically, I think, where was the power? Who was it that could take stuff from one county, or was it New York State that was doing all of these things for them? Or did they buy and sell each other, or what? How did those transfers happen?
It was acts of the state legislature.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there were certain lands in Tompkins County that are here now, like Caroline and Danby, for example, that were part of what was known as the Watkins and Flint's Purchase, where some men actually bought land and sold it off. They lotted it off and sold it. The northern part in Dryden and towns of Ithaca and Lansing were part of the military tract. The But it took, to form Tompkins County, it took an action of the state legislature. And I think probably one of the thoughts by naming it for a popular governor called Daniel Tompkins was to try to grease the skids to get that legislation through to form the county.
Thanks.
Can I ask one as well?
Sure.
A quick one. What happened to Cory Argonol?
You're talking about the Indian encampment?
Yes.
Well, I think we know where it is. I think basically during the Revolutionary War, when the Cuga Indian tribes were basically attacked and evicted, along with some of the other Iroquois nations, a lot of them picked up and moved to the western New York. I think basically that town was abandoned. Let's go to reports start with our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
I think I'm going to pass on a report tonight, Mike, but I did want to congratulate both you and Dan for your election to leadership again. It's really been a privilege to serve with you over the past year, and I'm looking forward to a 2017 that I'm sure will be an interesting year. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Questions for Joe Mariana? Let's go to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
So now I can go with no report and not feel guilty, because Joe did it for like the first time in how long have you been here?
8 years.
8 years, so no report.
But you still have to feel guilty. Questions for Jonathan? Let's go to Rick Snyder. Put him to shame, Rick.
I have no report for this evening. And I have... And I don't feel guilty at all.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda tonight? Seen any? Let's go to the consent agenda. We have some advisory board appointments from the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee to the Planning Advisory Board, Robert Stuteville, David Kay, and Rod Howe. And to the Environmental Management Council, Susan Riley. And we have some resolutions on consent. If you want it off and to be talked about, just say so. Out of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Resolution A.
Off.
Out of the Public Safety Committee, Resolution B, authorizing grant acceptance, budget adjustment, and disbursement of 2016 to 2017 Division of Criminal Justice Services 13A money for the Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board of Opportunities, Alternatives, and Resources. That's ID 6776. Out of the Government Operations Committee, Resolution C, establishing 2017 meeting dates. That's ID 6650. Out of Resolution Number D, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under. That's ID number 6648. Out of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution E, budget adjustment, housing summit funding for follow-up activities. That's ID 6766. Resolution F, budget reappropriation of 2016 grant funding to the 2017 budget for HeatSmart 2. That's ID 6757. Could I have a motion to accept the consent agenda? I've got Dave, seconded by Peter. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That is unanimous.
Mike, we have Ed waiting for...
I'm sorry?
We have Ed waiting for Resolution G.
Well, why don't we take your committee then? Go ahead, Martha. Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is the chair.
All right. Thanks very much. I would, and thank you very much for the history, Mike. It's great. I really appreciate that you know so much and that you share it with us. Appreciate it. We met on December 21st and had an interesting meeting, but let me just go right to G. So if Ed doesn't want to listen to my report, he can go. Document 6761A, establishing the Tompkins County Energy Advisory Board, and I so move.
Seconded by Dave.
And there is a one-word change that basically we made some changes to the written resolution in committee, and Katrina got almost everything, but I wanted to change, I think, expressed in the meeting was the word different. In line 34, instead of the following, it should say different, so that it says, resolve further that the membership shall include representatives from different segments of the community, such as, and then a long list. So this is being requested by planning staff. It is similar to other boards that they, you know, groups, task forces that they have used. For example, developing the housing strategy. There's a group right now to developing the energy roadmap. They had a sort of steering committee, sort of targeted group that was developed and helped staff to form, to do research and form policy. And this is kind of the purpose of this group. And there's an interest in perhaps calling it a task force instead of an advisory board, and I hear from staff that wouldn't be a problem, but I'm showing you what I'm presenting here, what came out of committee. So if there's a motion to change that should come from somebody else.
Is there a motion to change it from an advisory board to a task force? Dooley Kiefer. Is there a second? Seconded by Rich John. Discussion on the amendment. That's friendly, I think. It sounds the way you said it.
Yeah, that's friendly to me, and who seconded
it? Is it friendly to the seconder? Seconded friendly to Dave. So that is friendly.
And I wonder if Ed can just talk a little bit about the board and the function and be here to answer any questions.
Ed Marks is our planning commissioner.
Make it worth his while to sit here.
Thank you, Martha. We had a lot of activity in the last couple of years on energy issues. As you well know, the energy roadmap, the report from the Energy and Economic Development Task Force, both of those reports had significant numbers of recommendations for action that should be taken. And in this coming year, we intend to update the energy strategy. We had a 2020 energy strategy, which was adopted, I think, in 2008, and we would like to update that based on these more recent reports. And it's very important to have community engagement, representation from the community as we go through their process. There will be other opportunities for public input, certainly, but to be working with a cross-section representation from the community of people with interests and expertise is very effective. We found that in the roadmap and the task force that existed previously. And those folks all committed to a period of time, and their services ended, and we'd like to have a formally constituted group endorsed by the legislature to guide the next couple of years' work on the energy issues.
Thank you. Let's go to Dooley and then Carol.
I wanted to recommend another change to the resolution. I think you have it in your red packets. I'm not sure. But it's on page 2 of the resolution, where instead of having some three lines from the bottom, something that says local organizations involved in energy sustainability, economic and social justice issues, parenthesis 2. The 2 doesn't belong there, and that was an error to have that in that resolution, but I am proposing splitting this into 4 separate lines to give it the same kind of weight as, for example, large business, small business, chamber of commerce. There are several entries that are business-related, so I would like to separate these to give them the same prominence to allow people representing any of those areas to apply for membership also. And I'd move that change.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Dooley, may I ask, is that changing the number of people or simply
no,
the categories?
The categories that one can select the different members from.
No, it does add. It adds one person.
No.
Let me go to Martha.
Two to three.
If you'll note, again, line 34 and 5, resolved that the membership shall include representatives from different segments of the community, such as. It doesn't indicate, and we discussed this in committee, doesn't indicate a sort of one-to-one correspondence, that there shall be somebody from each of the listed entities. It just kind of asks that those groups be represented, and that there's an open process of people. You know, we expect Marsha will put out a press release and ask people to apply, and this kind of expresses the kind of folks we think would be appropriate and add value to the board, to this task force.
And line 31 gives a range of membership, 15 to 20. This listing these things on separate lines doesn't change the size of the task force.
I have Anna next.
I really don't see this as a big deal. I think to quibble on this one, I think that it's a good addition. I don't think it hurts anything to specify these, and I think that it aligns with our comprehensive plan to specifically identify these. So I think it's a really good thing because of that and because of the climate that we're in. I hope we don't quibble over this for too much. I think it's a really good idea.
Carol?
Yeah, I would urge that this be just accepted as friendly. We had a fair amount of discussion about this at committee, and we talked about whether to meet again to do this kind of list, and we were running out of time, and I think Dooley had volunteered to try to put down on paper what the issues would have been, and it just didn't seem to be, especially since it's following segments of the community, it just got down some of the essence of what people wanted to talk about. I could say a little bit more if it's not accepted as friendly, but I would hope that it...
It's on the floor as an amendment. Is there...
Well, no,
is
it, but it still
friendly?
Could be accepted as friendly by the mover and the seconder.
Let's ask.
That's what I'm asking before I go on.
Well, I don't remember the conversation as it seems you do, so I think it should be voted on. I don't remember this was part of...
All right, so it's not friendly.
Then
I
can just say that I think the...
I think I had the floor.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, go on. I'll take the floor back afterwards.
Are you done, Carol?
Well, no. If it wasn't accepted as friendly, I just wanted to go on to talk about what some of the discussion was. There was more detail listed on some of these others, as Dooley has pointed out. And then the energy issues as a broad category, as we talked about it some more, seemed to be, you know, well, what would that mean? Are you talking about people who work for renewable energy and sustainability? Sustainability has come to mean more than renewable energy. Energy issues is a more specifically that we talked about in terms of the need to set up this board, that energy issues in particular, this is a board that's going to focus not on the kinds of things that the EMC does, but on sort of the economics and the all of the range of issues that come to play when you're talking about an energy advisory board or task force, that it's the economics, it's the impact on the climate, it's the location, it's the what forms of energy, and there's a lot of technical information involved, and people who think about this from the local organization perspective
you know, there can be very different organizations that look at energy and sustainability. And same thing with economic issues. You're talking about who can afford to buy what kinds of energy. And then on social justice, it's, you know, what happens when that wind farm, you know, moves in next to you? Is there any potential assumptions there? And so these are very different things to represent. And at times over the course of this board, you might want to have people who can speak to those things and the flexibility to recognize that. And it just gives a credibility to those various perspectives to at least have them listed in the same way that we assume that large businesses and small businesses, you know, might have slightly or very different perspectives, as might the Chamber of Commerce, TCAD, what was the other one that was more business-oriented, real estate development. But those are five different takes and perspectives on business and those kinds of interests, and these would be, what, four different takes on the people who think about this from the aspects, various aspects in the community. So that was what we had talked about meeting again to work on, and then resolved it by saying, well, let's just put a listing rather than specific seats. And then at some point, I'm interested to know why people thought it was important to call it a task force as opposed to advisory board, what the difference is.
I have Dooley next, and then Martha. I remember we're speaking to the amendment.
So, Martha, I did not mean to give you the impression that the separability of those topics were discussed at committee. They weren't. This is an open discussion of the resolution, and I thought it was useful to separate these and give them prominence so that people can apply from their own areas of expertise. I've forgotten the other thing I was going to say.
Martha?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to support this. I'm in favor of it, but I guess I wouldn't accept it as friendly because it didn't reflect the conversation at committee. That's
right.
Kind of where I'm going on that. So I do support this. I just want to confirm three. I find three places where we change advisory board to task force, and see if this is what you have, Kathy. I've got in the title, line 25 and line 31, if that sounds right. Okay. And I think the idea of task force versus advisory board was, it's in the memo. It's on line 31, talks about a three-year term of operation, and it's kind of in the memo that staff added to our packet that it's meant to be a three-year board or three-year term and not meant to be, at this point, it, you know, potentially could be renewed for a year or longer, but at the moment it's intended to be to have a three-year life. And that was kind of why task force... On reflection, some people thought task force expressed that better.
Are we ready to vote on the amendment?
Yes.
All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's accepted unanimously. Are we ready to vote on the resolution? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That is also unanimous. Anything else, Martha?
Sure. My report?
Yep.
Okay, so people should look for a press release. Thank you very much, Ed. People should look for a press release notice about applying for this task force, and the names will come to the committee and then the legislature for approval and appointment. At our meeting on the 21st, we had a full agenda. Where'd it go? Including especially a report from representatives of NYSEG, or everybody should learn to say Avangrid, about their proposed Energy Smart Community, an initiative that's a part of it's a demonstration project about that's basically in in compliance with expectations of the Public Service Commission, that they develop a sort of an electricity use initiative. There will be about 12,000 homes in a certain segment of the county that would get smart meters for electricity, and some of them, those about 8,000 who also have gas supply, will get smart gas meters. And so we had quite a lively discussion about this initiative. I won't go through the whole thing, and I think it's when they're ready to roll out, we should probably have them just come here and describe it directly. At committee, the Avangrid reps said it was going to roll out January or February. Katie Borghella told me since that because of work they have to do on their substations, this will happen more like April to June. So it's going to be pushed back a little later. At the meeting were a number of members of the community who had a lot to say about the gas pipeline that Avangrid, that NYSEG is also proposing, and opposing it. And we made clear, I think we made clear, that we do see gas as related to electricity, and we are eager that the utility approach them together in a comprehensive way. So that's a quick summary of that part of our meeting. We talked about the Energy Advisory Board or Task Force. We talked about the housing strategy with the follow-up from the Housing Summit and the needs assessment and the department's interest and activities related to how do we take the information that we have and actually create a strategy, meaning what are the county's priorities going to be related to housing. That's kind of what they're going through now to try to identify the right priorities for our own actions. So we heard some more about that. Those are the main things, and if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Questions? Rich, John.
Avangrid, has NYSEG changed its name, or is it changing?
It's like Avangrid bought them, and somebody helped me. I mean, it's like, I don't know. They're interchanging.
I think it's been inserted between
Iberdrola?
Iberdrola and NYSEG. It's a new, it covers...
I thought they misspelled avant-garde, but, you know, maybe.
It's like A-V-A-N-G-R-I-D. So it's a much hipper name than I say, don't you think? It's like, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think for our purposes, it'll certainly be understandable if we still say NYSEG. So.
Which, of course, was founded in Tompkins County.
Oh, and one other thing, one other piece of news. I just want to mention the... Energy Navigator that we had put into the budget, I think we put $50,000 into the budget, with an application to the Park Foundation for either matching or some part of that, some part of the full salary. That application did not get approved in this round. They're going to look at it again in a couple of months. So it may just be a timing thing. They had too many requests for this first round. So. Ed informed us that that was going to be on hold until they could sort out the rest of the funding.
Okay. Thank you, Martha. Let's move on to Charter Review Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
I thought we sunset.
It follows through until we get the new committees established.
Oh, we haven't met. We don't have any plans to meet. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, when's the next round? Sorry.
7 years.
Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you very much. I had one item pulled from the
resolution A.
Agenda.
From the whatever you call it.
Consent.
And it's item A. It's a delegation of authority to authorize certain tax and solid waste fee refunds under $500, and I would move that.
Seconded by Glenn. Dooley, do you ask for that to come off?
I pulled it off. I couldn't let a meeting go by without my pulling something off, Jim. I'm sorry. So,
like Obama does.
So what I want you to all look at, though, is Resolution D, because the language in Resolution D equally well applies to Resolution A, and that's why I pulled it off. If you look at line 24 in Resolution A, or the next to the last resolved, we're asking the county administrator to give us no later than the 15th of each month a report of all refunds processed. And we really don't want all refunds processed, just all the refunds processed in the preceding month. And that's the language that should be added in that resolve, just like Resolution D.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Is that friendly?
I'm going to have to say that Joe's been the county administrator for, I don't know, 6-7 years. I've never heard him say once what refunds we've given back. So, at any rate, you're doing your job well. So, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Is that friendly?
Yeah.
Friendly with a seconder? Okay.
Yes.
Can we then vote on Resolution A as amended?
Yes.
All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
The only other thing, we will have a regularly scheduled meeting fourth Monday. Whoever chairs the committee, you know, that's when I'm suggesting there be a meeting.
Questions?
Thank you very much.
Martha's got a question.
Yeah, it reminds me that the next planning committee meeting would normally be the day after the second legislature meeting. So if it's okay with the committee and the chair, I would kind of poll everybody, check with the planning staff and see if there are items that we should maybe have a special meeting before the next ledge meeting. Otherwise, planning would probably end up skipping the entire month of January because of how.
So members of the committee should expect some kind of a poll about that?
Is there any reason why we can't just meet on the regularly scheduled day and still have the new planning committee started February, because since the agenda would be set before the committees were established?
That might be a Kathy question, because once the chair announces the new committees, we get a little bit funky on the formality of it.
Well, I was just going to say also that we don't necessarily know that will be the meeting date. Depending on who's on the committee, it may have to be adjusted.
No, I understand that for February, but
you're saying because an
agenda has to go out, what, the week before? And I can't imagine that committee going, since meetings, we have trouble fitting everything to go with a whole month without a meeting.
Tell you what, planning committee, stay tuned. We're going to figure this out, okay? So we don't have to do it right now, right?
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, thank you.
All right, next is the jail study committee. Richard John is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. The jail study committee has not met since our last meeting. We'll meet again on January 19th, and there is a public information session scheduled for that that day with a presentation by CGR, the consultants hired by the county, followed by the opportunity for members of the public to come and comment. Either 5 or 5:30, I think we talked about. We're going to have to set that. Any questions?
Jim?
Who would be announcing the variance, the extension, or has that already been done?
Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was announced at the committee meeting that the variance has been extended for 6 months.
Okay. That's good news, by the way. Anna?
Do you want to do a poll internally for the timing, or do you have a sense of when you want to post that? I want to put out an announcement.
The committee has done a draft op-ed piece with announcing the time, and we just need to insert the time into that op-ed.
So that'll come out in the next
letter. The idea being we typically meet at 5, but to allow members of the public to get there, we thought maybe 5:30 was a better start time. That's my recollection of the discussion, but other members of the committee can correct me.
That's a great idea.
I'd say why don't we go with 5:30?
Okay.
Okay. old library, or I'm sorry, we have Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is the chair.
Mr. Chair, I like Duty's answer. We have not met, and we don't intend to meet. No, I'm kidding. I like that. I think I should just do that. WDIC is not scheduled to meet until the 4th Wednesday in January. We certainly do have a packed agenda for ourselves for this year. One of the major issues that we will be tackling, we've been hearing from members of the representatives of the LGBT community on some of the issues that they are facing, and we're certainly making that a priority for us. We are looking to engage our personnel department and others in county government on trainings around implicit bias as well, so that we're all operating from the same knowledge base. So we do have a lot on our agenda for this year. That's my report.
Questions for Leslie? Thank you, Leslie. Old Library Committee, we have not scheduled another meeting yet. I've heard by way of rumor that the matter of the Old Library Project is not going to be on the ILPC Commission's agenda for January. Anyone else who knows differently? It's going to be pushed over till February. So if you were planning to go to that meeting, which may still happen, it may still be a meeting of that ILPC, but apparently the Travis Hyde project will not be considered at that point. Is that your understanding, Martha?
Yeah, I heard they're redesigning again. Yes.
Joe, is that what you've understood too? Okay. Yeah. Just want to make sure I'm right on that.
They're whatting again?
Redesigning, and they asked for a delay.
Who's redesigning?
Travis and Graham.
Oh. Which one's up with the city or the developer?
Thanks. Developer.
Okay.
Let's go to the Public Safety Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Yeah, Public Safety Committee hasn't met since I last announced its last meeting. And we have one resolution. Do you want to do that now?
We have a resolution?
Yeah. Resolution B.
We already adopted that on consent.
You did? Okay.
So
oh, that's consent. Okay,
you get a free pass there, Peter.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any questions for Peter?
I have a hand up.
Oh, sorry, Dooley. Go ahead.
It's not so much a question as when... when I was looking at Resolution B, which is passed, there is, for example, in line 12, a reference to a capital RAP sheet correction program. And
RAP sheet.
Yes, a RAP sheet. And I wondered what RAP stood for.
RAP.
I don't think it's what rappers do. So it turns out it means record of arrests and prosecutions. I just never knew what it stood for, and I thought I would share that. Kathy Covert looked it up for me, so now I know. I could guess what it meant from the vernacular, but I just didn't know where it came from.
Well, I thank you for telling me that. I always knew what it was from my research and watching crime shows on TV, so I knew what it was. But
thank you, Dooley.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to Health and Human Services Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne again.
The Health and Human Services Committee has not met since our last meeting, and we will not be meeting on Monday, January 16th, which just happens to be Martin Luther King Day. So committee members, either stay tuned for another meeting day, or we're just going to follow Martha and not meet in January. We don't know. Things might come up. I mean, we're always busy at Health and Human Services, so I am sure that there will be things we have to tackle, and we might have to find a new date. That's my report.
Questions? Thank you, Lisa.
No, I had a question. What is the status of the tobacco?
It went back. It went back to the drawing board for finalizing and coming back to committee because they brought a draft to us. Committee had a lot of questions and so on. And so, Frank, they were going to work on some of those questions, clarify some language, bring it back for us to take a look at again.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Next is Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. F and I met earlier this evening prior to this meeting in these chambers. We considered two resolutions, one for award of bid for the Thompson County Public Library 21st Century Renovation Phase 1 project, which is basically the restrooms, complete restoration of the restrooms and an addition of another restroom somewhere else in the facility. That was passed, and the other was an audit of final payment for DeWald Roofing Company Incorporated for the Tompkins County 2016 roofing project, and that was also passed. And that is going to be the only meeting for January for F&I, and that's my report.
Questions? Thank you, Dave. Transportation Committee has not met since my last report to you. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Government Operations Committee will be meeting tomorrow, Wednesday, at 3:30, right in these chambers. We've got a big agenda, a couple of the things that you might want to think about ahead of time. We're going to have a report about the status of providing Wi-Fi in the county buildings. So if you have a question or comment about that, let me know. Either show up at the meeting or let me know in advance. We are going to hear from our county administrator goals for 2017 and also how we did in 2016, how the goals did. And this is just, you know, a great window to see what the county is doing because there's very few things that are going on in the county that our county administrator is not involved in. And we're going to continue the discussion about amendments to the rules of the legislature concerning debate and procedure. That's my report.
Questions for Dan. Martha.
Joe, would you mind sending all of us your – you do a one page or two pages on your goals, and do you also have a written on last year? Or on the?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's in the packet. It may be in the GO packet.
Right.
But I'll be happy to send you both. One is, the, like Dan said, the updated 2016, how do we do? The other is the proposed 2017.
Much more than one page.
No, I know. And I appreciate that because I don't get the whole packet. But and I know, like, it's lines like a page of lines like end poverty in Tompkins County, you know, fix all the roads and bridges. Right. That's you've got a page of those. And right. I understand. So
I'll send those out.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Anything else for Dan? Have minutes of December 20th. Someone want to move those? Anna? Seconded by Martha. Discussion on the minutes? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Is there any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn? By Anna, seconded by Dave. Favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you all. We're done before 7:30.